A group of friends headed out to a barrier island along with hundreds of others to celebrate the 4th of July. But when this group came back, one of them was left behind. Did he choose to stay behind willingly and fall victim to an accident, or was something more sinister to blame? This week's episode is Nolan Wells, The Case So Far, Part 1.
A bump in the night, your heart fills with dread. Probably a murderer who wants you dead. It could be a ghost, a demon, or worse. Perhaps you're the victim of a witch's curse. It's hopeless, you're doomed, you'd call a priest if you could. You'd rather just listen to who? Sinister Who?
This is a very hot topic right now.
Yeah, we had folks tag us in it, ask us about it on the Q&A, and there's been so much misinformation, and it seems like now intentional disinformation that's being put out, that we thought might as well try to comb through everything we can find for you all.
Yeah. I mean, if you're chronically online, you certainly are aware of this case, and now that Nancy Grace has gotten involved and Don Lemon and a few others, it's gaining even more national attention, as it should.
Definitely.
This is a I'm trying not to get sued this episode, so I'm just going to say, allegedly, my opinion is that this is a very suspicious case.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that even isn't allegedly, just straight up things that the folks involved have said and done and provided that have contradictions in the own stuff that they've provided, or contradict stuff that the investigation has revealed. We should start off by saying no one's been charged. And in fact, a cause of death has not even been determined, as you listen and formulate what you think potentially might have happened. But this episode's basically just a little bit of background and everything that happened on that day. Try to kind of go moment by moment. And then part two is the investigation and all the aftermath that has come. And in fact, yesterday, just as we're recording this, a whole new interview got released. So we will talk about that in part two with a couple of other friends.
From Officer Tatum.
The officer.
So unbiased is he in his reporting.
I did watch it was a licensed professional counselor was breaking down that interview and just said, I'm not sure if this man's being paid by these boys' defense or what, because it seems that the phrasing of these questions is extremely biased. I was like, yeah, to the point that at some point he feeds them an entire narrative to where the boys these young men respond, yeah, yeah, that's what happened. Yeah, yeah. It's like he's told what to say.
And earlier you were about to say, this happened, right? Oh, yeah, yeah, thanks. Sorry. There could not have been a more softball interview than this one. And also, fact, he works for Turning Point USA.
Yeah, I think formerly.
Currently, but has. So, you know. Just pull at those strings and see what you come up with.
Well, and the new lawyer that was hired by three of the young men who were aboard the boats that we'll talk about is a Trump lawyer who seems to be familiar with Officer Tatum. And yeah, he was, you're right, he was previously director of engagement, and I think he's officially still a contributor to Turning Point USA. So interesting.
He's also a black man, which has not gone unnoticed that he was the person that they chose to have interview them.
Yeah, and step up. So
they reached out to be interviewed.
Seems like it.
Set up who they want to interview them. Sat down and, man, and this is just my opinion about anything, not even this case, but when you tell a bunch of lies, it's really hard to remember them and keep up with them. And it's really easy to trip yourself up when you're trying to recount something that happened, if it's all lies, because your brain keeps wanting you to spit out the truth because you know, that's what really happened. That's what's in your head. So, and that's just in general in life, not even about this case.
No, truly, reflexively, yeah, stuff tends to just pop out, which might be the reason why the first few interviews was just the young men by themselves. And now their lawyer is sitting shoulder to shoulder with them, wearing a hat. And then
what does the hat say?
It says call Cox, which is C-O-X, who is the name of not only the mayor of the town, but also apparently the name of the local council who has also been retained. And this gentleman in the interview, the Trump lawyer, is from New York. So he has to get a local council to work, you know, side by side with him. So he's wearing this hat and maybe he's got a tic. He might have a syndrome that we're not aware of. It does seem to be in coordination with certain things that the young men are saying, that he'll tip his hat like a baseball player. He grabs
like you would be giving perhaps a sign to someone at first or third.
And
yeah.
It's like we wouldn't notice anyway.
Also, just stop wearing fucking hats in interviews, you dumb dipshits. And this goes for the boys and for adults. You look like you are not taking it seriously. When you show up to an interview in
a dirty
khaki
t-shirt,
shorts, a graphic tee, flip-flops, and a backwards baseball cap, you look like you just fucking left frat row and you're not taking any of this shit for real. So that's just my personal opinion. Y'all look like a bunch of fucking idiots.
At least wear your church clothes or something. You look like
dress up. Have some respect. It's like would you go to court dressed like that? Some would. I wouldn't, because there's a certain respect that one shows in these situations. And when you're being interviewed about your friend that is now dead, I don't know, maybe throw on a pair of khakis and a button down or something.
Also, maybe get choked up once in a while and act like you give a fuck. Because at no point was anyone crying or upset.
No.
The amount of like, I did nothing wrong. I was attacked at a restaurant, and by attack, someone went, I saw your interview on Officer Tatum. We're getting out of here. And they were like, I'm attacked. I stand by my statement that white men are the biggest victims and crybabies in the entire world. And these fellows are not doing their gender or race any favors. But watching them repeatedly come back to I, if you were dead, you, Christy Wallace, my best friend, they said he was my best friend, he was my brother, you are my best friend, you feel like my sister, and if you were on an autopsy table somewhere, I wouldn't be able to sit up straight, much less spit out what seems to be some type of pre-planned things that you're trying to say. That's not to say every single thing they said was a lie. In fact, we utilize their interviews for a lot of the timeline on here because it's backed up by, you know, timestamps and stuff. It doesn't mean everything they said is true either. So.
No. And I think with a lot of cases we cover, it is a mixture of lies and truth. And some of that is intentional. Some of that, like you said, your brain just reflexively like wants to say the truth, or you just forget and you're like in the middle of a story and you're like, yeah. And then so at like 4:30 we left, and then you're like, fuck, earlier I said it was 3. What am I gonna do now? And that's the problem when you lie, is you're gonna get caught in your lies. So just tell the truth and the truth shall set you free, or in this case probably wouldn't. Probably, maybe that's why, in my opinion, they are not telling the truth.
Not entirely. And it's fascinating to hear their attorney say, these 3 boys that are with me right now, they had nothing to do with anything. And in fact, they were heroes. We won't be talking anymore about that. And you're like, yeah.
How
wait,
were they
what?
Heroes? No further questions.
Wait, what? What did they do? So
no.
There's a lot to unpack with this whole case, but it's definitely an anomaly that so many people who have either even been tangentially accused, mentioned briefly in regards to it, have come out and done this strange media tour that, in my opinion, is very misguided and will be used to impeach them in both civil and criminal litigation in the future, because they're gonna subpoena Tatum for like the full tapes, and we'll cut that out. You know, if there's any moments like that, they're going to find it. They're going to find it. You recorded it all.
And some of them seem like they should have been, they were supposed to be cut out, and then somebody uploaded that without cutting
it
out.
had a little oopsie moments.
It's very telling, in my opinion, that nobody asked for them to go on these interviews. When you see online that, oh, I don't know, everyone thinks that your story is made up and that you are complicit in some way, I imagine you would try to get ahead of the game and speak your piece before, I don't know, charges might be brought against you. But it's looks very suspicious, and I don't know. This case and another case that is not at all related to this, except for the fact that I feel like we're all being gaslit, the Lindsay Clancy case, are just really getting to me. I also, though, have seen in both of these cases a lot of chatter online in a positive way of, this is one of the first times that, like, most people online seem unified that, like, this is not, this story is not what happened to Nolan, and Patrick Clancy's story is not what happened either. So I feel like a turning of the tides as far as, like, public consumption and what we are led to believe, and just that we're expected to take these people's words, you know, and not ask questions, that's starting, the tides are turning. And these cases are very polarizing in the victims and the perpetrators both. So I feel like the internet is ablaze right now with people that are pissed off. And if you want to just get a case solved, get a bunch of moms that have gone through postpartum or have been abused by their husbands, they're going to solve this case, as well as there's a lot of people doing independent journalism on the Nolan Wells case that we will also cite that I think are going to help solve this case too.
I think you're right. In the past, with a Lorena Bobbitt type case or something, they sort of run with it. You watch the media try to run with a narrative or something. And there are so many now, we'll talk about an audio engineer who uses their professional skills publicly, or with the Lindsay Clancy case, I saw a Massachusetts attorney. I just saw multiple different doctors that have come forward and talked about different aspects of, and the same with this case as well, therapists, psychologists, body language experts analyzing it, to where in the past, I think it would be a lot easier to cram a single narrative quickly down our throats. And the democratization of media is such that I don't get my news from CNN. I get my news from, you know, Breaking Points or, you know, Jay Megan, you know, somebody. It's a digital creator who brings receipts, and I trust them because they don't just say, it's like we've talked about in Prairie Land. You can't trust Steve Eager from Fox 4 News anymore. He's full of shit because he just goes, well, the police told me this, so I'm going to say the thing the police said. Next story, it's going to rain on Tuesday. And you're like, okay, versus folks that actually care about these topics of justice kind of go, that seems like bullshit. And I think folks like that are listening to the show. So thank you for being, not just taking the first run story that's fed to you. Oh, well, you know, Nolan was super drunk and passed out and whatever. Who knows what happened to him? Anyway, let's all just move on. Let's leave these all-American kids. They're just all-American good boys. Just leave them all. You know, it was an all-American good boy. Nolan fucking Wells. He was an all-American kid. So just doing the process that you would do in any other circumstances, taking the steps that you would take and not allowing people to have access to digital evidence and not turn it over to the authorities. But that's all for part two. All that to say, we got a lot to get to today.
Yes. Well, I'm Christy.
I'm Heather.
And let's get into it. Nolan Xavier Wells was born August 19th, 2007, and spent his entire life in Ocean Springs, Mississippi, a coastal town just east of Biloxi. One of six children, Nolan was the son of Elmore Wansley Sr. and Christine Wells Wansley. The family was tight-knit and attended church at St. Joseph and St. Elizabeth Seton Catholic Church in Ocean Springs. Nolan's family later cited Colossians 4:2 about devoting oneself to prayer and staying watchful and thankful as one of his favorite verses. An avid sportsman, Nolan grew up playing football, basketball, and baseball alongside a tight circle of friends, several of whom he'd known since freshman year of high school. One of those friends, Trayston Shepherd, said in a later interview that Nolan
was somebody that you just automatically felt so comfortable to talk to.
And that the friend group which Trayson described as racially and ethnically diverse, bonded over athletics and a shared admiration for Nolan, saying,
"Nobody would ever hurt Nolan in our friend group. We would die for him. We would do everything in our power for that guy. If he needed anything, we would do it. Nolan brought us all together."
This is giving "he doth protest too much." Like,
that's the problem.
Anytime someone over explains, I mean, it's not just my opinion. Like, ask anybody, like a body language expert, whatever. Over explaining is a huge tell that you are not telling the truth, because you're padding it with all of this information that nobody really asked for.
Right.
It's just, look, we couldn't have possibly done this because we would die for him. We would do anything for that guy. Yeah. Nolan brought us all together.
Yeah.
What?
He was the number one friend. We all loved him. And you're right. The way that they're all like, he was my best friend for sure. Number one. No, I don't love anyone more than him. He was my best friend. And again, not crying, not upset. This answer from Trayson to Officer Tatum, he says, him being the only black person, that's not true. That's insane. Our friend group was diverse to the max. Like, we have a mixed guy. I mean, we had Nolan. There's an Asian. I mean, there's a Latino. They're trying to perceive as white. He's truly authentic Mexican. His parents are from Mexico. They come over legally. They did everything right, and he's been here since. But it's just been it's like, what are you fucking talking about? You start listing them off like Pokemon?
Also, listen to the language he's using. They come over here legally. They didn't do it, you know? Like, why is that even something you would say in an interview? You know what I mean? Like, and it's important, I think, to point out that Trayson is mixed race as well. And does not speak favorably about the black family in his life.
Yeah, he literally said, "The only family that's helped me has been my white family," and sort of unprompted. So
yeah,
there's a lot of just accidental telling on themselves because they're nervous youths. I mean, they're over the age of 18, but they are just like, they can't shut the fuck up.
No, and none of them are over 21.
Mm-mm.
So early 20s, some just graduated high school that are there on this island. Some came back from college, but like everyone is between 18 to 21, mm-hmm. arguably.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe even 17 to 21. But it's weird to have one of the only other biracial friends in the group go on this interview and say these things that he did.
It's
strange.
One wonders what the impetus was.
Mm. At Ocean Springs High School, Nolan became a two-time all-region wide receiver, catching 63 passes for 724 yards and 10 touchdowns over his junior and senior seasons. His teams never lost a district game during his time on varsity. In an interview with the Sun-Herald, Nolan's high school coach, Jake Bramlett, called him
a remarkable and unique individual who always had a unique way of expressing himself that put everyone around him in a better mood, no matter the situation.
In the same article, fellow teammate Sheroyd Whitehead, who said he grew up with Nolan, called him
the most respectful person I know who loves to help and is always happy.
He sounds like a wonderful boy by all accounts. And it's heartbreaking that his life ended in such a short and tragic way.
Certainly. From all accounts, it sounds like the kind of kid you want your kid to be friends with.
Yeah, respectful, like you could trust him if you were his mom or dad, like he was going to be where he said he was going to be. He wasn't going to, you know, lie, get into trouble on purpose. And he was just a really good kid that I wonder how much of these friends were really friends with friends like these people. Do you really need enemies?
Right. It's like, we're all friends. See you later. Sinisterhood will be right back. Today's episode is sponsored by the ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program.
If you've ever owned a pet, you know they run on their own logic. Jump first, think later, ask questions, never. It's part of what makes them so lovable. But it's also how you end up with those surprise vet visits you didn't see coming. ASPCA Pet Health Insurance helps cover eligible vet expenses, so when those moments happen, you can focus on getting them the care they need without overthinking the cost or second-guessing your decision.
The ASPCA Health Insurance Program offers customizable accident and illness plans that can fit your budget, your lifestyle, and even your pet's particular quirks. Because let's be honest, vet bills can add up fast. ASPCA Pet Health Insurance has been around for almost 30 years and has covered over 1 million pets. And when it's time to submit a claim, it's easy. Just use their app and receive reimbursement for eligible vet bills directly into your bank account so you can get back to focusing on what really matters, your pet.
To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/creepy. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/creepy.
Again, that's aspcapetinsurance.com/creepy. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independence American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer and is not engaged in the business of insurance.
Nolan graduated from Ocean Springs High in 2025 and signed to play football at Southwest Mississippi Community College alongside several of his Ocean Springs teammates. On National Signing Day, February 5th, 2025, he told WLOX it was
truly a blessing
to continue his football career there, framing the moment less around himself than around the fact that his friends were continuing their journeys together. At Southwest Mississippi, he played wide receiver for the Bears. His college coach, Les George, remembered him as someone who
was that guy that never had a bad day. Never.
Adding,
he was very sociable with everyone. Didn't meet a stranger. He'd pop up at my office and come sit on the couch just to hang out and talk.
So a good kid. Just all of these things make him sound like he was very sociable, friendly, well-liked by peers and coaches, which is saying something. You know, your coach is the person that is trying to get the most out of you, and to have a good attitude and never meet a stranger. He would just come and talk. It's these are the kids that, like you said, you want your kids to hang out with.
Mm-hmm. There's a model.
Yeah, model student, model friend. On July 3rd, 2026, Nolan cooked his parents a dinner of baked salmon after his mother had had a long day at work. Before he left the house that evening, he told her,
"Hey, Mom, I'm about to go. I love you."
And gave her a kiss and a hug. He then went to spend the night at a friend's house ahead of the holiday weekend. Warren Hudson, a friend since high school who would later be among the last people to see Nolan alive, has said the two of them were together that evening, staying at a friend's house before the larger group met up the next day to head out to Horn Island. No verified reporting names the specific homeowner, though Nolan's father later said he went to that same house, described as belonging to one of the friends who was on the boat with Nolan the next day, to retrieve his son's car keys, noting the car was still parked in the yard.
Yeah, it seems like a pretty normal, you know, love you, Mom. See you later. I'm going to go hang out with my friends tomorrow. And if you're all going to get up early at like 9 something and get together, it makes sense. You want to pregame the night before maybe and sleep over somewhere, crash in a basement or whatever.
Yeah. And these last moments always get to me. There's no way any of them could have known that would have been their last interaction. I'm glad that it was a sweet one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, showing how sweet he was, how much he loved his mom, taking care of him, baking him baked salmon for dinner. It's like, again, it's like what teen, 20-something, not none of them, but maybe not every single one of them, is making dinner for the family after mom's been at work. So again, just showing character.
The morning of July 4th, 2026 started like a lot of 4th of Julys on the Mississippi Gulf Coast. A hot, humid day with boats being loaded at docks up and down Jackson County. Nolan was one of hundreds of young people making the same plan that morning to get out to Horn Island. The island itself sits about 7 or 8 miles off the coast. It's a barrier island with no docks and no facilities. Reachable only by boat, it consists of nothing but sand and water. Every 4th of July, it has become an informal gathering place. This year, by early afternoon, it drew hundreds of people anchored along its shallow shoreline.
And this is what irritated me about the ex-Officer Tatum interview, is that he kept saying, well, everybody said that it's just a single tiny little deserted island with nobody but Nolan and four white friends. And that's the only people that were out there, and they just took him out there and killed him. And I'm like, I don't think anybody said that. I mean, I think we all know
that from anyone.
It's like, it makes you think of in like Louisville and Dallas, they called it Party Cove, or in Chicago, there would be like the Cove Party where everybody would know, okay, you're going to anchor, you're going to tie off. Everyone's just like splashing and swimming between boats. I don't think that's what folks thought here, but it's funny that throughout these interviews, you hear him try to point out, well, the whole narrative around something nefarious happening to Nolan must be false, because I saw a single person mention, oh, was it a deserted island? And it wasn't. Therefore, everything about it is wrong. It's like, no.
No, I mean, it is. It's wild that, you know, a bunch of young teenagers are going out there with just themselves and alcohol and boats. And there's literally nothing on the, if someone were to get hurt, or, you know, nobody's there. It's just a small little island. Definitely a place I would have gone and partied had I had been around something like this when I was in high school. As a parent, I'm like, God damn, what do you mean everybody's driving their boats drunk out there and then hanging out where there's, as far as we know right now, there was no adult supervision. We'll talk later. One adult was reported being there, but left. So, but it's not like they have lifeguards stationed, or that there's a security guard and a shack on the island just to make sure everything's on the up and up.
No, it's crazy to think. Yeah. It's just you and all, and 500 other people, 100 to 500. I don't know how many people are out there. I mean, a lot.
By roughly 11 a.m., Nolan had arrived with a group of his high school friends at Horn Island and pulled in alongside dozens of other boats already anchored there. Nolan arrived on the family boat of his friend Wyatt Pryon, a 22-foot Triton. Another friend, Warren Hudson, rowed out with friend Bart Edmondson Jr. on Bart's boat, a 24-foot Tideline. Per Warren's account in an interview with conservative commentator Brandon Tatum, host of The Officer Tatum Show, these two boats were joined by a third, an 18-foot Palm Beach belonging to an unnamed friend.
Yeah, I mean, he said that it was not really windy that day, that basically music's blasting, the water's clear, it's bright and sunny, a cloudless day. It's like the day to go out and party with friends, that you're probably not thinking it's going to end horribly.
This also shows the level of wealth.
Yeah.
That we're dealing with to a degree, at least with, you know, I mean, if you own your own boat and you have your own dock and all that, you're doing okay. And if you're willing to let your kid drive it, then I'd say that you have either a lot of trust in them, or it's kind of gives like Southern rich vibes, like with the Murdochs, like, yeah, we're just cool, rich Southern parents that, you know, our kids can have a few beers and then go drive around. We did it. Nothing ever happened to us.
You know, and the fact that I believe Bart's dad was going to go, but then he didn't. So then Bart drove the boat out there. So then it's like, you kind of know they're going to put a bunch of coolers with ice. The question then sort of becomes, if you are the adult that's giving underage folks the keys to a boat and you, with full knowledge of what they're going to do, to what extent does liability extend to you?
And there was a very good example of that in the Murdoch case. At the island, Bart's boat, the Tideline, was anchored closest to the beach. Then the 18-foot Palm Beach boat was tied up in the middle. And finally, Wyatt's Triton was anchored furthest out toward open water. Roughly 10 to 15 people, including Warren and Bart, arrived on the Tideline. Four or five other friends arrived on the 18-foot Palm Beach, and eight or nine people, including Nolan, arrived on Wyatt's Triton.
So you got, you know, 20 to 30 people amongst this group that it was kind of like, oh, you're going to ride on that one. I'm going to ride on this one then. You know, and knowing that they were all going to anchor together. So I won't say it didn't matter who rode with whom, but it was kind of like, well, once we get out there, the part where they anchored, it's a shelf that goes out, I don't know, maybe 50 to 100 yards. And then they, after the shelf, it really drops off much, much deeper. So where they were anchored, they said it was like waist deep off of the stern, neck deep off of the bow. So, you know, you could hop off the boat and just be standing in sand and sort of swim around there. It sounds, honestly, it seems like a fun place. Again, if you're in your 20s, this is the place.
Mm-hmm. What followed for the next few hours was what any of these gatherings look like. Boats rafted together, music, drinking, and people swimming between vessels. Hudson later said the group grew larger as the afternoon went on, telling Tatum,
"Everybody's drinking. It's 4th of July. Everyone's just trying to enjoy themselves."
An aerial photograph taken from a small plane passing over the island at 4:41 p.m. that afternoon captured the scale of it. Dozens of boats crowded into the shallow off the island's tip, wakes crossing in every direction, swimmers scattered across the water between them. Warren, who said he considered himself Nolan's best friend, told Tatum he and Nolan spoke a handful of times that day, but weren't glued to each other. Warren said,
"I wasn't focused on anyone solely."
Warren recounted to Tatum that, to him, Nolan seemed
completely fine. And that's, it's kind of, there's a whole, throughout the whole interview with Warren, you can't have it both ways, where I think some of the reporting has been, Nolan Wells was drinking alcohol and was drunk on the thing. Well, then when you hear Warren tell it, everybody was drunk. Everybody was drunk, and that Nolan was funny and having a good time and joking around and talking to people. It wasn't like, oh man, he really got hammered by noon and was passed out because he was drunker than everybody. It's just like, it seemed like an average amount.
Yeah, I think they were all, as one would, I mean, partying. Like, it's not, I mean, is it illegal? I guess technically they're underage, but that's what everybody went out there to do. And everyone was just having a fun time. And like you said, you can't say somebody is completely fine and then also say they're so drunk they don't have their wits about them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like you can't have it both ways. But if you're, if it's an incomplete, inconsistent story you're pushing, it would seem like you're trying to have it both ways.
Mm-hmm. Sometime in the mid-afternoon, accounts place it loosely around 3 p.m., was the last point at which Nolan's family's attorneys say he could be placed with certainty among the group he arrived with. From there, the version of events changed depending on who is asked. The afternoon was interrupted when Warren's younger brother, Carter, got into a brief physical scuffle with another young man. By Warren's account, it ended almost as fast as it started, with his brother pulling the other guy into an armbar before things were broken up. Warren told Tatum he ran over afterward and never saw Nolan anywhere near the fight. After breaking it up, Warren claimed he reboarded the Triton boat and discovered it had been taking on water. Another friend, Trayston Shepherd, gave his own account to Tatum in a separate episode of the same interview series, uploaded to YouTube on July 25th. In it, Trayston described a second fight. He said he spent much of July 4th with Nolan, who he described as a childhood friend and considered a brother. Trayston said he left the island earlier than the rest of the group with his uncle after becoming involved in a physical altercation with people he said were unrelated to Nolan's group. This fight became known as the viral, quote, fight video, and Trayston has identified the shouting voice in that clip as his own. Trayston said the fight started over something absurdly small. His girlfriend was upset that he'd dropped the lid to her koozie in the water. An uninvolved bystander inserted himself into the conversation and allegedly threw the first punch. It's the second fight that led Trayston leaving the island shortly after with his uncle.
Yeah, so they can't keep it, their hands off of each other. Apparently, Carter, which is Warren's younger brother, gets into one fight, and some short amount of time later, then Trayston separately getting into a fight. Maybe Carter jumped in on that one. Maybe he didn't. It's, but in both cases, everyone said Nolan had nothing to do with this fight. He was not part of this fight the whole time. And the footage, based on swim trunk color, seems to corroborate that in that fight video where Trayston was hollering at somebody, he is the one in the red shorts who is hollering. And Trayston and Nolan have similar skin tone, so I think that's why people understandably got confused. Sinister Hood, we'll be right back.
If you've ever tried to get psychiatric care and hit a six-month wait list or bounced around between sketchy websites just trying to find someone who takes your insurance, same. That's why I was so impressed with Tachiatry. It's actual psychiatric care with real doctors that works with your schedule and your insurance. It's not another meditation app. It's real help without the wait.
What makes Tachiatry different is that it's not just therapy, it's full psychiatric care. That means you're meeting with a licensed medical provider who can actually diagnose conditions like anxiety, ADHD, insomnia, and more. And they can prescribe medication if that's part of your treatment. It's 100% online, but it still feels personal and thoughtful. You're not rushed and you're not left wondering what's next.
And the best part, it works with your insurance. No monthly subscription fees or paying out of pocket for every session. They've got over 800 in-network clinicians, and getting started takes just a few minutes. You fill out a short assessment, get matched with someone who fits your needs, and can book your first appointment in days, not months. Tachiatry has helped over 300,000 people already, and it honestly just makes the whole process feel doable.
Head to tachiatry.com/creepy and complete the short assessment to get matched with an in-network psychiatrist in just a few minutes. That's tachiatry.com/creepy to get matched in minutes. tachiatry.com/creepy.
Trayston's account of his closeness with Nolan became a point of dispute. Nolan's mother said she had never met him and that calling him a childhood best friend was
a bit of a stretch.
Nolan's stepfather told News Nation's Chris Cuomo he didn't recognize the name. Tatum pushed back on that characterization, saying Trayston had shared photos with him, showing him and Nolan at a school prom together, and describing rides Trayston said he gave Nolan to school on multiple occasions.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I think Nolan's parents know who his best friends were. These unrelated, by that I mean not blood related people saying, well, we were extremely best, close best friends, but his parents just didn't know about us. If you told me another teenager who did not have as close of a relationship with his parents, that's completely true. That could be true. But it seemed that Nolan's parents, he was making dinner for him. They know who he was going to go leave and be with.
Yeah.
They know.
And when you are playing sports and stuff, you're just by default going to meet other kids, be at games mm-hmm. with their parents and stuff. So if he's playing three different sports and they still don't know who this guy is, I've recently found a bunch of pictures from high school. There's pictures of me in pictures with people that I'm like, I have no idea who this person is. I knew them enough back then to be friends and take a picture, but I couldn't tell you now, like even what their name is.
No, right. No, I'd have to look them up in a yearbook. Yeah, certainly. Mm-hmm. But to have, if someone goes, look, there's me and Heather. There's five pictures of us together. I'm like, okay, that doesn't, I don't remember you. You weren't my best friend forever. Mm-hmm. So it's, that's not to say they weren't friends. Obviously, if they went to prom together, they were on the boat. There's apparently a call. Trayston claims, I'm not seeing a timestamp of it, but he claims that when they all arrived at the island, Nolan just called him to say, hey, where are you parked? Like, I'm on this boat. Where is your boat at? Kind of thing, to prove that they were checking in with each other as friends. So I'm not denying that they're friends. It was just interesting, the over description, not just Trayston. I'm not just picking on him. All of these guys who were just saying, he was my best friend. I didn't do this, though. You got to believe me. It wasn't mm-hmm. me. And you're like, oh, so we're not really choked up about your best friend / brother.
It wasn't me. And it wasn't any of these other kids sitting on this couch with me.
And we'll sue you if you say it was.
Yeah. There's a lot of, again, just over explanation of the relationship, putting more weight into things that have been by his parents. So I'm going to believe his parents over these kids of who his best friends were.
Easily.
You know, it's, again, they doth protest too much. Mm-hmm. During the July 4th afternoon, the three boats the groups of friends arrived on, the Triton, the Tideline, and the Palm Beach, were anchored together off Horn Island, a common practice for island partygoers. Per Warren's detailed account, at some point after the boats had been anchored for hours, the Triton's bilge pump failed and the boat began taking on water. The crew first tried to fix the problem where they were anchored. Wyatt jumped in to set a rear anchor. Another friend worked on clearing the bilge, and they tried unsuccessfully to get the motor to trim down. When that didn't resolve it, Bart, driving his own separate boat, offered to tow the Triton away from the crowded anchorage. Warren says they left the anchorage around 4:30 p.m., in part to reach an area with better cell reception. Warren and the others who rode in on Wyatt's Triton boat claim they were towed away without Nolan, who they say stayed behind on the island to hang out with a girl he had met, later identified in press reports as 19-year-old Katie McCormick. In his interview with Tatum, Warren said that as the boat was preparing to leave for repairs around 4:30 p.m., an unnamed friend aboard the boat called out to Nolan multiple times, saying things like,
"Nolan, get on the boat, we're leaving."
But Nolan explicitly said he'd
ride in with someone else.
Warren says at least five people on the Triton heard this exchange directly. However, Warren himself told Tatum,
"So the last time I personally laid eyes on Nolan was at like 3 o'clock, you know, and he was, in front of the boat with a girl. And that's the last time I saw him."
A statement that contradicts his claim of seeing Nolan at 4:30.
That's why I was like, so did you see him at 4:30 and you were on the Triton and you heard people yelling at him to get on? Or the last time you saw him was at 3 and this 4:30, you didn't see him and people just told you that they yelled for him to get on? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's a bunch of contradictions.
Yeah. And the other, not really a contradiction, but an extreme non-answer. Tatum specifically asks Warren, "Something interesting you told me about this, something he said to you, I would say would be indicative of y'all's friendship. And he also mentioned something to you about that particular day and what it meant to him." And Warren says, "Right." And Tatum says,
"Oh, no, no, no."
And Tatum says, and could you share that? Warren goes on to talk for almost 2 solid minutes and never once specifically mentions a incident, a moment, a thing that Nolan said. All it is, he's like, "Oh, Nolan was happy. It was great. He was smiling. He was always happy. We would joke. Our friend group was like that. You know, we loved our time together. There's never any awkwardness. We're very tight. Like, if I need to get something off my chest, like, I'm just going to talk to my friends, like, not specifically anybody. I'm just like, if I'm having issues with something, I just talk to my group chat and my guys are there and like, they'll give me a hand. And like, all my guys, like, we're the exact same way. And like, Nolan was the same way. Like, if you ever need something, like, I'm here." Like, that's how he was. And that's it. And then the interview moves on and Tatum doesn't say, "Oh, okay, I meant specifically the incident where you and Nolan had that and you shared it." So it's not a thorough interview. It's a pitching softball interview. And when the subject doesn't want to talk about it and talks around it, kind of substituting the general for the particular, starting to diffuse the references of going like, "Oh, well," instead of saying Nolan and I had a moment, saying my friends and I, we don't fight. My friends and I, you start to diffuse it. It's just unprompted reassurances that we're a harmonious group. We're a harmonious group. So again, they're very stupid people going on thinking that they are smarter than the millions of people that's watching, the present company included, who I'm at least smart enough to go, "You didn't answer the question." And you inserted a lot of other things in there that it was, you bear it. It's like this unaddressed question. And you just put all this like fluid, like huge, lengthy answer on it and never once answered.
Yeah, no, I mean,
it's
like talking to an 8-year-old that you ask point blank, "Did you track mud through the house?"
I would never.
Earlier today, my friends and I were out playing, and you know that we're really good friends. And I was over at Samantha's house, and her mom baked cookies because we're always doing such great things together. It's like, hello. Mm-hmm. No one, get back to what I asked you a simple question. Mm-hmm. Actually, I lobbed it up for you to just spike down to the point where it sounded like it was so planned that when Tatum prompts this, Warren's reply of, "Right," as if, "Yep, okay.
I'm supposed to answer
that. I'm supposed to talk about this now, or this is what my answer should be to this question." But you're nervous.
Mm-hmm.
And why are you nervous?
Yeah, no, I mean, I have no idea. Yeah, great question. And it's, are you nervous? Because when Tatum says, "When's the last time you saw him?" And Warren like sits up, stares down him and says, "So the last time I laid eyes on Nolan was 3 p.m. And I'm like, okay, no, because you just started talking at 4:30 that he was staying there and everyone was yelling. So again, it's like they think they're, okay, I'm going to get out there. I'm going to get ahead of the story. And they're just not smart enough to do it.
Yeah.
To pull it off. I think they're going to fuck themselves in the end.
I do. And I think, I mean, it's probably an obvious statement, but again, these are 18, 19-year-olds. They're not the ones setting up these interviews. They're not getting together with each other and corroborating all these stories and what to say and contacting someone that's aligned with their views to come interview them. They aren't the ones doing that.
Yeah, presumably.
Their parents are doing
presumably
that.
An adult, a real adult would be doing it. But to the extent that they answered that on all three, or both Warren and Trayston said to Officer Tatum, we love you. We love your show. We watch it all the time. That's why we wanted to come on your show, is because we love your show. Oh, sure.
Yeah. I mean, I bet you do love his show. And the fact that you've got the mayor of the town in pictures of
your family parties,
family gatherings at these kids' homes, birthday parties, Fourth of July parties and stuff. The mayor is there. The mayor, who, by the way, Mayor Cox, his name is on the hat of the lawyer that's sitting there very, not even discreetly, what I appear to believe are giving signs to the three kids sitting next to him of, yep, nope. Yep.
Like I said, maybe we're wrong. And he wasn't telling him what to answer. Maybe instead he's just got an itchy bald head, and his hat was just itching his little bald head under there. And he's having to address it. Some little hairs were trying to grow out underneath that cap. The Cox was so powerful, it was making hairs grow on his head during the interview. And he had to just tip it just at the right moment when the gentleman started answering a question. I don't know, but it
and
was
the boys
strange.
Kept having to look over to him
because the hair was growing loud.
Check on his itchy head because they were very concerned. So every time a question was asked before they answered it, they had to make sure he was okay. And so they looked over at him, or would lock eyes with each other.
Mm-hmm.
Or
sit up and look at each other.
You and I. How many times have we been out somewhere and we hear something and we can just look at each other and know immediately like what the other person's thinking, or it's a silent communication of, well, I know that that isn't true because of X, Y, Z, or
don't
oh, say shit, that. We're talking about this now.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's insulting to humanity that these fucking idiots think that they're the first people ever to get on camera and try and do something like this. And that, like, all of us, the majority of who are watching this case are older than them, are like, y'all think that we were born yesterday? You think we don't know what lying with your friends looks like and trying to, we've all been in high school and we've all had to make up stories and lies before. Don't piss on my leg and tell me it's raining.
I'm like, you gotta get up a lot earlier than that to trick me. No, for sure. So it's I like it.
I wrote the book on lying to parents and trying to get away with it. I see straight through your bullshit.
They say you can't play a player, baby.
You can't.
Well, but I think I love it. I hope they do 100 more interviews. I hope they keep talking and just write their own tell-all books. Because again, they're just not smart enough to pull off whatever it is they're trying to pull off. Whatever. What are we implying? Are you implying they did something wrong? I don't know what I'm implying. I can imply, though, I could say that my opinion based on watching them indicates to me there's deception in their answers based upon the contents of their answers and their physical body language. And that's my opinion as a person who's watched a lot of interviews with, folks like Chris Watts, who will say things like, oh man, I don't know what happened, as he grabs his neck. So again, that's not to say any of the people that have given the interviews with Tatum so far physically were involved in something that happened in Nolan. Certainly they were present on the day, and perhaps because they were not physically involved with something, they think, I got to get out there and make sure my name's clear because I'm not the one that did insert whatever thing happened. And, oh God, they're so dumb. Stop it. I mean, again, I don't care. I hope it happens. I hope they do so many more interviews because we can just break them all down. But if I was their attorney, oh my God, first of all, I would not be wearing a stupid hat, wearing a very cosplay, as Jay Megan, the TikToker, said. He looked like he's cosplaying as a guy from Mississippi. The New York attorney wearing a fucking, he's got a, what's the word? Camouflage. He's got a camouflage hoodie on with this stupid hat on.
You're in an interview talking about the death of an 18-year-old, and you're showing up in a ball cap in a camo shirt.
Act like you give a shit.
That's what I'm saying. Act like any of you give a shit. The only person, honestly, appropriately dressed was Tatum, who probably has to, you know, I mean, like,
wears a black t-shirt.
And khakis and a fucking Senor Frogs t-shirt and flip-flops, then he would have fit right in. But like, it's it's just so, it reminds me so much, and we can hold two truths at the same time. What happened to Paul Murdoch? Horrible. He was shot to death by his dad. What he did to
Mallory
Beach on that boat, also horrible. And to me, in my opinion, these stories are similar in that the drivers of both of those boats are entitled rich white kids from the South that live in a small Southern town that have a lot of ties to the people who run that town.
Well connected. Yeah. Do you know who my daddy is kind of folks? Truly. Yeah, I think so. And whatever happened, whether truly the most egregious, scariest thing that happened on that Triton was that the water came up over the batteries and they were afraid it was going to sink. That may be true. Did something worse happen?
Sink in 4 feet of water?
Well, at this point, they did eventually drive out to 30 feet of water, which I thought, well, you're sinking, so you went out further.
Yeah. Who does that?
That's a good idea.
Hey, you're sinking. Let's drive you out further to where you can't just jump off the boat and stand.
Yeah, no, I don't. And the tone of what we're sinking, we're going down. We'll play you the audio here in a second. But anyhow, so it's whatever happened. I think eventually the forensic evidence is going to come out. But for now, this is what we have is statements, public YouTube statements. Sinister Hood, we'll be right back.
If you've tried to quit vaping or smoking and keep ending up right back where you started, you need to hear about Fume. You've probably tried to quit more than once. You are not the problem. How you're trying to quit is. Pouches, patches, and gum only deal with the chemical side and keep you tied to nicotine.
But cravings aren't just about nicotine. They're about the habit, the hand-to-mouth motion, oral fixation, that momentary pause. When that loop is broken, cravings spike. Fume replaces your habit with a flavored air fidget device that gives your hands and mouth something to do, distracting cravings without nicotine, vapor, or batteries. Don't just try to quit. Upgrade the habit loop. Reach for Fume instead. We recommend the Journey Pack, which comes with the Fume device plus 6 delicious flavors. I'll tell you what, I pulled my Fume out of my, I keep it inside of a little bag inside of my purse, and it's so nice that I know that I have it in there and I can pull it out if I'm in a waiting room or if I'm in sitting in a public transit or in an airplane or something, because it's a device I can just fidget with. I can have my flavored air. I'm a crisp mint girl. I know there's raspberry, you get some tangy sweet, there's some maple pepper. They have all kinds of flavors, but I'm a classic. I like a good, just a standard crisp mint. And it's just, there's something about knowing that I have it and then I can grab for it anytime I want that does more than just than even sucking on it.
It's very comforting. It lessens the anxiety.
Where's my fume? Over a million people have already used Fume to quit differently. Join them today and grab a Journey Pack plus get a free gift with purchase when using our code creepy.
Addiction is really good at saying later. Don't let it. Head to tryfume.com. That's tryfume.com and use code creepy for a free gift with your first purchase. Thank you, Fume, for sponsoring this episode. Despite Katie being named by multiple fellow partygoers as someone Nolan spent time talking with that afternoon, her sister, Gracie McCormack, pushed back on the idea that this amounted to Nolan choosing to stay behind for Katie. She said the two had only spoken briefly and that Katie believed, like everyone else, that Nolan was leaving the island with his original group. Similarly, Nolan's parents have publicly and repeatedly rejected the idea that their son would have willingly separated from the group he came with, saying they had raised him always to leave with the people he arrived with.
The Katie situation is interesting because more than once Warren used the phrase he was cradling her, and Tatum kept using that phrase. He was cradling Katie, cradling, C-R-A-D-L-I-N-G, like cradling like a baby. And I have a country way of speaking, so I was making sure everybody knew what word I was saying. But like, it was just interesting to me. They repeatedly used that, but it's like, perhaps that's the last person everybody remembered seeing him with. And then that became sort of we left him with Katie. Meanwhile, Katie's like, who's this wee shit? I was with him. I saw you guys drive off. I thought he was going with you. I went the other way. So I wonder too, if it's like, well, if we get out and do these interviews fastest, then our story is going to be the one that everybody believes.
Yeah, could be. At 4:48 p.m., the recorded record became more solid. Wyatt Piron, aboard the Triton, placed a call to Seato, a private towing company.
We're going to insert the audio for you, and we'll just clarify the operator's voice has been taken out so you can hear more clearly what's happening on the boat.
Yes, and you might be able to garner from the responses what they're being asked, but basically she's just saying, hi, how can we help you? Okay, sure. And trying to ask, like, is everyone okay? How far is the water coming up? Things that if you were on a boat that was actively sinking, you would know the answers to.
Yes. And so you'll hear him answering. There's also photos of this phone call happening that Warren showed to Officer Tatum. So there's a photo of Wyatt on his boat with his phone up to his ear. And it's like a motion photo where you like push and hold and you can see the animation of it, that there's just 7 or 8 young people on the boat kind of fucking around, moving, bending at the waist, like trying to figure out what was going on with the boat, I guess, at the time. And it was shot from Bart's boat, which was the one that towed them out there about a quarter mile away from where they had initially been anchored.
And it has not been verified. However, web sleuths are positing that, like we mentioned, the red trunks belong to Trayston, that based on other photos of bathing suits people were wearing, that it looks like a person that was wearing the exact same hat that Katie was wearing and the exact same bikini Katie was wearing is on that boat.
And that's the issue, too, is that there's no manifest, there's no list of who all was on there. And I don't think so far it's been positively identified. But you're right, the web sleuth that we've seen is where they've pulled photos of Katie from social media and compared it to, same with some of the other kids as well. So to the extent who was on that boat, we don't know. But we do know Warren was on the boat and Wyatt was on the boat. And you can hear Wyatt in this call.
Hey, we're at the west tip of Horn, and our bilge pump stopped working. We're sinking. Can y'all please come? We have a membership.
Shut the fuck up!
Damn it, Bart!
What'd you say? Hey. It's coming up. It's we're just sinking. I don't know. Like we're going down now. I don't know the phone number. It's either Jerry Adkerson. I think it's Jerry Adkerson. Try that. I know we have a membership, like, guaranteed.
What?
I don't have the tag on here. It got ripped off. Reach me at 2.
What?
Yeah, everybody's off the way. What?
Oi!
No, we do not need that. Let me go look.
Will, wait,
North. All right, are you ready? North 3 degrees. Bye. The 4672. Sorry, what do I need to send you? Yeah, what? Yeah, we do not have the VHF radio. Okay, my coordinates are 30 degrees by 14.684 north and then west by 88 degrees by 46.79. Yes, we are at Horn Island. Yes. We are sinking, yes. No, we're not aground. We are in 17 foot of water. We're in 31 foot of water. I want to get this boat unsank and towed back, yes. You can tow it to Ocean Springs Harbor. Or Fort Bayou launch. No, there's no children.
Hey, Lord, drop in the water.
Gotta jump in and pull the plug, Bart, while you're going.
Take it out of gear.
Hello.
Take it out of gear.
Okay, what's going on? What's up? There are zero adults on board. No. Nobody here is over the age of 21. Hello? Yes, there's lots of people breathing on the boat. Like seven.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Yes, we have life jackets available. A Triton, 22 foot offshore, 22 foot Triton offshore sea flight hole. Okay, thank you.
Before the call could be transferred to a tow captain, the crew got the boat moving under its own power. They shifted their weight to the bow, pulled and reset the plug, and got the boat up on plane, which let the excess water drain out as they picked up speed. The CETO call was never completed. When CETO separately reached someone connected to the boat, they were told the situation had been handled and no tow was needed. The boat then continued at speed back toward the mainland. The CETO recording became the center of its own controversy. After TMZ published a version, it said it had digitally enhanced. TMZ claimed that underneath the commotion, additional words became audible. Something that sounds like,
"Nolan,"
followed by a clear,
"Oh my God,"
phrases that sound like,
"Check his chest,"
and
"Wake up,"
and a caller yelling an expletive-laced demand to be quiet. Some online commentary went further, claiming to hear in the background,
"Is he dead?" And if you, dear listener, are wondering why they would say things like this while the phone was on, what happens is when you call CETO, it begins recording as the phone rings. And Wyatt and the other participants on the boat did not know that. And he's got the phone up to his head. It's ringing. His microphone is picking up 20 to 30 seconds before the operator says, "CETO, how may I help you?" And then he's like, "Shut the fuck up. I'm on the phone," understandably. Well, any and everything that said before that, they just thought they were yelling into the ether. It, in fact, got captured on CETO. TMZ digitally enhanced it and then published it. And then folks listened to that and went, "That sounds like someone saying, oh God, Nolan."
Yeah.
Meanwhile, all of his friends said, "Nuh-uh, that's not what it says."
Yeah. And, you know, you all can be the judge for yourselves. Yeah. I have my opinion. Mm-hmm. And I've seen the photographs, too. And we do see someone on their phone. And then you think, why was that tow canceled? Do you think maybe someone was calling their grandfather, who was the owner of that boat?
Well, or CETO says somebody got a hold of the owner of the boat on the call. You just heard him say the man's name of who was the membership, and that's, you have a membership to come get towed out, which presumably is why it's grandfather or another male relative. And yeah, if you would have had to have told that relative, hey, everything's fine, for then CTO to call the member, the named member, to say, okay, we're going to send the tow out, and for the named member to go, everything's fine, don't come out.
Yeah, you would have had to have told them something.
Somebody had to have known. Or you go, no, don't tow my grandson. Let him drown in the ocean, which I highly doubt. You know, it's more likely that he knew they were fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which depends on the definition of fine.
That's one working theory. Yes. Russell Latino, the attorney representing Bart Edmondson Jr., one of the young men aboard the Tideline who gave the group a tow, was even more direct, telling News Nation's Chris Cuomo the enhanced version has
no legitimacy,
and calling it doctored audio deliberately paired with a fabricated transcript designed to make listeners believe they're hearing words that were never actually said. He's maintained that his client's only role that day was helping a boat in distress, and that Edmondson has cooperated with investigators throughout.
Bart is the, I won't say star punter. He is a punter for the University of Wyoming. I believe he is number 12 in the Mountain West Conference punter. So he's not just kicking around on the football team. You know, you might want to try for a professional career. You know, it depends. So I imagine your name being Googled in connection with this is not your favorite thing, and lawyering up makes sense. He was the towing boat, and was the boat that presumably from which the image of the Triton sinking, supposedly sinking, was taken, because they said Bart towed us out on his Tideline and his side cleat was tied to our boat from with a line. So who else would have taken that photo? The question is, from that photo, are they close enough, the boat's close enough, that if there was a commotion on Bart's boat, would the audio have been picked up by Wyatt's phone? I think you can't say it wouldn't have been. I mean, you're close enough to take a photo. You're close enough to chuck a tow line. I think, hey, hand me that. You know, you're not 100 feet away. You're, I don't know, 20 feet, not even.
Maybe,
yeah, closer. So Latino seems to think, Bart's attorney seems to think, that TMZ's whole audio was just totally made up. If you compare it to the released audio, all that's changed is that they removed the lady's voice.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's less, like, less loud at the beginning. I didn't get from TMZ that they had used AI or that it seemed built upon.
No, I didn't either. And for what it's worth, I'm not a huge fan of them.
No.
So for me to say, no, I think that they didn't do anything shady with this is saying a lot.
Yeah. And for as shitty as they are and whatever connections they have, they're run by a lawyer. Like, you know, Harvey, the main guy that runs it, he doesn't want to get sued. So he's very careful with the hedging language they use and caveats. Mm-hmm. And so he's not dumb enough that he would publish fake audio. I think he's completely fair game to publish cleaned up audio if you throw it through Adobe Audition or whatever. It's nothing illegal about that. Sinisterhood will be right back. Helix Sleep is a premium mattress brand that provides tailored mattresses based on your unique sleep preferences.
If you were to ask me what are my top three favorite things to do ever, sleep is going to be two. Might be one on some days, because
that mattress
is so good. We talk about it all the time. And I don't mean in this for ads. I mean, Tommy and I talk about it just to people that we meet and friends we have all the time, to the point where it seems like we're really trying to sell it. And like, yes, but also because it legitimately is the best mattress either of us have ever had.
It's true. I mean, when you have the good night's sleep and you hear anyone complain about back pain, complain about motion transfer, night sweats, anything that I have solved with my Helix mattress, I feel like an evangelist as well, that I want to stop them and be like, do you have a moment to hear about Helix Sleep?
Mm-hmm.
Because buying a mattress, it's extremely overwhelming. But when you take the Helix Sleep quiz, it's so easy. It matched both of us with our unique different mattresses we have, because we sleep different. And now, I mean, man, I look forward to going to bed at night. They delivered it to the house, just drug it inside, just opened it up, 129 trial, knowing if I didn't like it, I could, you know, get another one, send it back. Helix, they've won a ton of awards. You know why. because you lay in it. And the proof is in the when you just let your whole body just melt into it. It's an upgrade.
I'm going to be buried on my Helix mattress.
Line my coffin with Helix or don't put me in the ground at all. Let me rot.
Go to helixsleep.com/creepy through August 13th for their Labor Day early access sale for 20% off site-wide.
That's helixsleep.com/creepy through August 13th for their Labor Day early access sale for 20% off site-wide. helixsleep.com/creepy.
After TMZ's version, a separate version of the audio circulated from a Texas-based audio engineer with 16 years of experience in dialogue editing and post-production. Rather than rely on AI, Janetta Brantley used standard editing techniques to isolate background conversation in the original MDMR released audio, posting her results on TikTok. She has denied any allegations of manipulation and reiterated that she simply used industry standard methods to achieve the clearest possible sound. Her version has circulated alongside and has been falsely conflated with TMZ's own separately enhanced audio. Janette's audio went viral with TV hosts Nancy Grace and Don Lemon, both of whom were convinced by its contents. Attorney Ben Crump, who is representing Nolan's family in a civil suit, has said he's since hired his own audio engineers to conduct a forensic analysis. This means a third version may eventually enter the mix. As of now, no investigators have publicly verified TMZ or Janetta's findings.
And MDMR is the Mississippi Department of Marine Resources who offered this audio for everybody. So we're going to play Janetta Brantley's enhanced audio for you now.
Hey, we're at the west tip of Horn, and our bilge pump stopped working. We're sinking. Can you all please come? We have a membership.
Shut the fuck up!
By early evening on July 4th, the boats that had been at Horn Island made their way back toward the mainland. The Triton returned first to its original dock, was later moved to Fort Bayou, and was eventually trailered to a family residence in Biloxi. After the group got the sinking boat back to the dock, Warren Hudson said he went to a friend's house, where they ate and napped for a while. From there, he and some friends headed over to a party at a young woman's house in Pass Christian, who was hosting a 4th of July gathering with fireworks. The group swam and hung out, but Warren has said he personally never got in the pool. Instead, he spent that stretch of the evening upstairs, talking with the host's father about boats, while the rest of his friends were downstairs. It was only when he came back downstairs and heard his friend Wyatt talking about Nolan that Warren says he first asked where Nolan was and learned no one had heard from him.
Everybody knows that a 20-year-old who goes to a cool, fun party where everyone's drinking goes upstairs and has a serious conversation with this girl's dad for a long time about boats. Just so happens to come downstairs and say, oh, where's Nolan? And this is a moment. It's at 14 minutes and 49 seconds in part three. Yeah, part three of the interviews. And they're talking about this party. And Warren says, basically, Tatum says, you know, you talked to the young lady's dad, then how long was it before you realized or you guys realized, hey, where's Nolan at? And Warren says, I went back downstairs and all my friends were just hanging out. And I, my buddy Wyatt had addressed, you know, talking about Nolan. And I was like, well, where is Nolan? Have y'all heard from him? And he was like, oh, no, we haven't. And I was like, okay, well, you know, that's a little concerning. I mean, like, I'm not freaking out or anything, but I'm like trying to find out where Nolan is. So I texted Javon, yada, yada. But what got me is that he said, my buddy Wyatt had addressed, you know, talking about Nolan. It just something about that phrasing was like,
he yada yadded over some stuff.
So so you can go listen to it for yourself. Like I said, it sucks that we're giving this fucking guy views because I hate him and he's making money off of all of these clips. But maybe you go find it on TikTok somewhere so you don't have to give him views.
No, for real. And don't think that he's not going to write a book or some shit about all of this. It's strange. I'll tell you right now, I can't think of one party I've ever been to as a youth in my college drinking days that instead of hanging out with my friends, swimming and drinking, I was like, you know what? I'm going to go upstairs and just talk maritime with your dad. And just, and the way he, again, over-explained the conversation he had with her dad and how they were just talking about boats and he loves boats and I love boats and boats and boats and boats and boats. Mm-hmm. It's so much context that isn't needed.
Yeah. No. You just add stuff in.
He just adds stuff that is fluff, filler. It's like you're told to write 1,000-word paper and you're like, I got 200 and the rest are kind of just be like a bunch of words that I just keep repeating over and over.
Mm-hmm. Like word salad, just trying to fill it out. No, truly, it's like over explaining, over answering. And I think because in a situation like this, this is odd behavior, in my opinion. And the way he explained it, Tatum says, you know, you guys were swimming at the party afterwards and having a good time. And Warren says, I never got to the pool. I talked to her dad for a while. And I mean, all my friends were downstairs. I went upstairs, talked to her dad. We're talking about boats. And, you know, I've been with my friends all day. I was just talking to everybody. So again, it's just this, like, I was talking to everybody. Like I was upstairs just with her dad. Well, I was talking with everybody. So, can't keep it straight.
No. And again, apart from knowing that Nolan has died. And in that interview, he also knows Nolan is, I mean, it has been confirmed he's been dead at that point by the time he does the interview. Doesn't seem sad.
Again, no, they talk about the day you found out. Again, this was filmed sometime before July 25th. So less than a month after your best friend, not just missing, but has been brutally killed. And I just, for someone who just over and over says he was my best friend, he was like a brother to me. The idea that I would have multiple hours of sitting up and talking with not once physically showing an emotion of sadness. He doesn't, his face doesn't crunch up. His eyebrows don't inadvertently. It's all attempted displays of emotion versus actual emotion popping through. And a lot of times when you see people go to cry, they kind of, it shocks them. It comes up like a wave on them versus when people like are on the stand and they're trying to generate emotion. They start going and making
Patrick
weird noises. Patrick Clancy, you're like, well, that's, and then can turn it off when you're asked another question. Mm-hmm. That's not a normal indicia of behavior. And shout out to behavioral expert Tracy Brown, who I sat through a conference with her one time. And I was like, now I know everything she knows. Just kidding. I just go and look at her TikToks all the time because she'll analyze like clips and stuff. And I kept thinking about her during this
stuff too.
Oh yeah. I kept thinking about her during this because you don't see that genuine swell of emotion that you would expect to see in someone who had suffered such a catastrophic loss. So raw, even fucking Alec Murdoch genuinely was crying and sad that his son was dead. Did he also shoot him? I think so. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But like Murdoch wasn't fake crying. And I'm like, you're not even as good as Alec Murdoch in your interview.
That's the thing is, I mean, we mentioned Patrick Clancy too. And others, you know, that are on the stand. Karen Reed case, for example, there's forced fake emotion. And what I find fascinating about body language experts is that there are so many just micro things that as humans, our face does, our body does, just without us even trying to, just subconsciously, ways that we act when we are lying, when we're being genuine, when we're genuinely sad, when we're angry. Not once do any of these boys, I'm going to stop saying boy, young men, seem like they are genuinely upset.
Truly. I'm sad. I'm really sad. It's very sad for me. I was very sad when I heard he died. It was sad. It's like, okay, well, you said it was sad, but you're not upset at all when you're saying it.
Think about the time that you found out someone that you loved dearly, family, friend,
other died. And then if you were to retell finding that out to someone, how that would feel and look like for you. And then go and watch these interviews. And you be, you, yeah, again, you be the judge of whatever it is you think. If I had to talk about when I found out my dad had died, I wouldn't be, and zero emotion. You know, you would see my eyes glaze over or roll back, like when you're re-experiencing trauma, or, you know, you look up and to the left when you're lying and down and to the right when you're recalling things. Those things are just things that we do in their subconscious, which is why it's so fascinating, because even the best liars can't fake stuff like that, because it's just an innate thing our body does.
It is. And it's, and I think it was Tracy Brown in her, the Lunch and Learn I did. She was talking about, because your brain is trying to do so many things at once, like remember the fake story and control your face and fight against, you know, it's hard, it's like fighting a cough, right? It's hard to fight a cough when your face is making a different thing. So she's like, oftentimes that's why one of those things will slip, is because it's like you're trying to balance too many things, versus, like you said, somebody that's just recounting what happened and telling the truth. You don't really have to think about anything because you're just saying whatever happened. So yeah, like Christy said, go watch for yourselves, because it's certainly around 15 minutes when they start talking about like where they were that night and making the phone call.
Yeah. And again, it's another example of, he's asked a direct question and he turns it into a monologue. Most of which is just fluff.
Yeah. Sinisterhood, we'll be right back.
By 11 o'clock the night of July 4th, concern was turning into alarm. Phone records shared publicly by Warren Hudson during a later interview showed he placed an outgoing call to Christine Wells Wansley, Nolan's mother, at 11:07 p.m. The call lasted about 5 minutes. It was followed by a second, two-second call moments later. 6 minutes after that, at 11:13, the same record showed a 21-minute outgoing call to the Coast Guard. Close to midnight, Christine contacted the Jackson County Sheriff's Office directly to report her son missing. She also posted to Facebook that night, asking for prayers and for anyone with information about her son's whereabouts to come forward. A widely circulated photo showing Nolan in a pool surrounded by a group of people spread online after he was reported missing. It was initially read by many as evidence he'd made it back to the mainland that night. But the photo was not actually taken that night. Metadata confirmed that the photo was actually taken a week earlier, on June 27th, not on July 4th itself. It was posted the day after in a case of bad timing.
Well, and another, that's another thing Tatum pointed to and said, everyone was circulating this photo and it was not even from the time. Yes, but you would understand why in the photo from a house, they had all said they'd gone to a party and it got posted the fucking morning after. I can see why people would think that. But yeah, the metadata showed it was just an old picture and that's fine. But it, when you have nothing, you have to hold on to these shreds of, look, this picture was wrong. It's like, okay, yeah, we all agree with you. That picture's from before. We don't need that picture to prove what happened.
No one's arguing that. Okay. And in fact, had it been really him, I would think that it bodes well for the people on the boat. So why Tatum is pointing something out that doesn't even align with his version of events, and he does it multiple times. He's just a bad interviewer. And I don't know. It's embarrassing, honestly, at times.
Well, I truly started looking into case law of what level of knowledge a podcaster or interviewer would have to know of what truly happened versus what narrative you're pushing to, if for some reason there was any reason to get charged with accessory after the fact or conspiracy, and just depends on what you know. And so I would be careful about what text messages and recorded phone calls and stuff you have, because, you know, hypothetically, totally unrelated case, if someone came to you and came to us and said, okay, Sinisterhood, like, shit went bad and some bad things happened and somebody died. And anyways, can I just come on your show and you guys just interview me and really make it look like I didn't do this? And we were like, yeah, for sure. We can help you cover it up. Like, if someone came to us and said, I never did anything, and we just believed them blindly, we would not be at all implicated. But if you had that advanced knowledge and were coaching and offering questions that were specifically formulated to advance a narrative that covered up or that was intended to avoid criminal charges against someone or to evade police investigation, at some point you can go so far that you are an accessory after the fact.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It just depends on what you know and what you said.
Just after midnight, in the very first hours of July 5th, the Mississippi Department of Marine Resources was formally notified. Dispatch logs showed MDMR Lieutenant Patrick Caron was advised at 11:49 p.m., technically still July 4th by a matter of minutes in some records, crossing into July 5th in others. The caller reported a missing 18-year-old male who had traveled to Horn Island by boat and not returned. From that notification, the search that would occupy the following 2 days began to take shape. Patrol vessels were dispatched, and within hours, plans were forming for sonar surveys along the island's northwestern tip. Sadly, the search would end 2 days later, when Nolan's body was found in the water just off the island's shore. The Wells family is asking for help determining what happened to Nolan. If you saw something, heard something, or know something, they want to hear from you. Your information can be shared confidentially. Please send any tips to the family care of their legal team at Ben Crump Law. The firm will not publish your name. If you want to remain anonymous, say so in your message and you will not be identified. Visit bencrump.com/Nolan Wells tip line or click the link in our show notes. So what do we think?
Well, I think right now we have an undetermined cause of death. We'll talk about the autopsy in part two, as well as some of the MDMR, which always sounds like a drug, but it's the Marine Department of Marine Resources, Mississippi Department of Marine Resources. They have a lot of PDFs that they released and then later said, we didn't mean to release those. Well, I'm sorry, you released them. So we'll go over those.
Actual PDFs.
Yes, a portable document.
The file of
yes,
PDF.
A portable document format file. So the copies. And also the civil lawsuits, kind of what his family has said, what happened. Right now, it's just, there's not, in my opinion, there's not enough evidence to know exactly what happened, but there is enough evidence to know something happened. Mm-hmm. And that the something was not a simple slip and fell or slip and something. I'm not sure what it was. And we'll talk about what my theories are with regards to the autopsy in part two. But it's, if there was nothing at all that happened and it was literally like, we just didn't see him, I don't think we would see hours and hours and hours and hours and hours and hours of interviews. It would be like, I don't know. Yeah. But instead it's, well, this happened. And then we had this moment, but we're not going to tell you about it, but it was really magical. And we were together and it was, so going through and just watching all of this. I'm not saying Warren did anything. I'm not saying, the guys in the other interview or Trayston Shepherd or, Jax, I think, and Morgan is the names of the other kids that just did interviews we'll talk about in part two. I'm not saying any of them harmed Nolan physically, but the contents of their answers indicate to me that they know more than what they are telling and that they are choosing to be evasive in their answers or incomplete. And that's my opinion based on hearing what they had to say. Again, I'm not saying they're the ones that did the crime. God knows who was on the island, who was on those boats. We only really have five or six names. It could be a totally unknown third party that we haven't named them yet, but I don't, based on the autopsy, I don't think it was just a matter of like, well, Nolan slipped and drowned. Like that's not what occurred. I don't think.
No. And another telling thing that we have not discussed, we'll discuss in part two, is Nolan's phone.
Yes. Yes.
And where it was,
what happened,
how it was returned to his family and what had been deleted off of it prior to it being returned to his family. Mm-hmm.
So what all, and his car keys and all that stuff. So thank you to everybody that's asked us about this case and asked us if we've done it. If you have any links or tips or anything, not like, you know, tips, if you have tips, send it to Ben Crump Law and to Nolan's family so they can share it with authorities. But if you have resources that you think there's a creator or a investigator, you think we need to look at their materials or anything like that, feel free to just send it in as you would sinisterhood.com/contact and you can send it, do it on the main feed as a suggestion and we'll grab them all from the database. But
yeah, or sinisterhoodpodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah, sure.
Works too.
It is a crowdsourced case. I think more and more cases we cover are trending that way. And it's just a sign of the times and how people communicate now. I mean, social media is such a part of, especially people this age, their daily lives that something got captured somewhere. Someone got a video or a Snapchat or something somewhere. And much like the Murdoch case, I think it's going to be something from a phone or from a Snapchat that kind of breaks everything wide open.
I think you're right. Yeah, we could not have known, you know, in episode one of our Murdoch coverage that there was a Snapchat video of Alec at the scene 30 seconds before Paul was shot. So I think for all the interviews anybody could do, you can't consider if there's 1,000 people out there with phones, you just don't know what they might have. And you don't know what a subpoena to Snapchat, Facebook, Meta, Instagram, TikTok might capture, or AT&T might capture. And as that comes out, I think a lot more will come out. But yeah, send us whatever you have. We'd love to take a look at it.
And just ending on, the family's attorney has told everyone involved, don't delete your phone, don't get rid of your phone. So, and that was sent to them weeks ago. So if anything's getting deleted or all of a sudden a phone gets thrown in a dumpster at a military base, like in the Karen Reed case, just happened to rip my phone in half and throw it in a dumpster on a military base. Makes complete sense. Who amongst us hasn't done that? Then, but if we all of a sudden find out everybody got a new iPhone 17 the day after this happened, and it was just so crazy that we all went to Apple together and did that, it's going to be another big telling thing. Or they adhere to the subpoena and we find out things that way.
Yeah, preserve your data. I don't think, even if you delete it from the phone itself, I think there's recovery, ways to recover it. So
yeah,
we'll see what all comes out. But this is part one, and stay tuned for part two.
Yeah, it's a evolving case as we speak. So even what we know now is going to change by the time we do our next episode. So yeah, definitely send us any information you think might be helpful. And if you have direct information, send it to Ben Crump's law firm. Well, if you like our free episodes like the one you just listened to, you'll love our Patreon bonus content. You can join for free just to see what we're up to next, or dive into over 1,000 hours of bonus content, like Judge Christie, where I rule on petty grievances you bring before the court. True Crime Headlines, where we break down the latest news and updates in true crime. Heather Saves, or anything Heather has found late night scrolling could be discussed. And Am I the Asshole? Unpopular opinions and other subreddits that we feel require our input.
We also offer free trials. That is where you join for a week at any of the tiers, check out all the perks, binge all the content, and then cancel anytime before the trial is over to avoid getting charged. But you can also stick around, get an annual membership where you get 1 month free, and you get so much content all year long.
Ad-free episodes, monthly live stream Q&As, quarterly live stream bonus content. We let you all vote on what you want to see, like a Judge Christie or Heather Saves. You get weekly audio bonus content, mini-sodes. One about the Afro Man trial is coming soon. You get merch discounts and a community of the best listeners on the whole internet.
Head over to sinisterhood.com and click shop on the top banner to check out Sinisterhood merch like t-shirts, mugs, totes, stickers, and even clothes for your kiddos.
While you're on our website, you can also review the show. Thank you so much for everyone who's left 5 stars and kind words. You can submit topics for cases you'd like us to cover, your odd but true tales for Freaky Friday, and whatever bizarre or hilarious video you want us to live react to during Sunday Scaries, our weekly live stream over on Patreon every Sunday at 8:30 p.m. Central. It's completely free. You just put in your email. You get immediate access to the stream, to the unedited videos, to the chat. And now we're kind of doing some new stuff. So even if you're not able to make it to the stream the following Monday, you get to hear what we talked about.
Yeah, we want to make sure you can be with us and chat with us, even if you can't do it live. So I feel like you're there.
Also on our website, you'll find fun things like topic-based playlists and information and tickets for Crime Wave 2027.
Follow us over on Instagram and Threads at Sinisterhood Pod. Like us on Facebook at Sinisterhood. Follow us over on TikTok and YouTube at Sinisterhood Podcast to watch clips from the episodes, live streams, and more. And if you are looking for a unique and personal gift for the Sinisterhood fan in your life, just want to treat yourself to a pep talk, book a cameo now, from happy birthday to birth announcements to congratulations on whatever accomplishment. We would love to create a customized video for you. You can order from the comfort of your own home and go to cameo.com/sinisterhood on a web browser to get the absolute best price. Where can people find you online?
I'm on Instagram and Threads at Christy M. Wallace and TikTok at Christy or GTFO. Heather?
I'm on the internet at Heather versus the world.
As always, the devil rules the airwaves.
Keep it creepy. Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for supporting the show on Patreon. Here are your special Patreon shoutouts: Maggie,
Jaleesa Parsons,
and Ryan.
Thank you all so much for supporting the show. We could not do this without you all. We sincerely appreciate each and every one of you. We hope we pronounce your names correctly. Stay safe, stay healthy, and keep it creepy.
Wah-ha-ha-ha. Sinisterhood.